Okay, here we are back, and just checking a few things. The readers are not here yet. I just sent a note to make sure that our webmaster gets them posted. All right, there's several things going on here. One is a relatively new issue, at least in terms of chatter. There's a lot of chatter about it on the net, on social media, chatter. And it has to do with something we'll talk about in a couple of minutes. We'll tease you with terahertz, all right? But for openers here, we're going to talk about something else that I don't think many of you actually pay much attention to. And we'll get to that right after saying hello to Erica. Hello.
Hi there.
I haven't talked to you in a while.
Happy Monday.
What have you been doing?
Trying to stay out of trouble.
Well, for you, that's no problem. That's easy. But seriously, the Broadcastify, and I hope a lot of you are listening out there, it's very interesting to watch the amazing uptick in calls now. They're just, sometimes it's, what, two or three, four an hour, even?
Yeah, this past weekend was quite busy. You know, you can hear it in these guys' voices, guys and, you know, there's a few women there, too, but you can tell when they're fresh, you know, on the shift, and then...
Talking about the dispatchers and the EMTs,
well,
both of them.
More so the EMTs. Yeah. You can hear it when they're, you know, they're fresh and well-rested, and by the end of their shift, I mean, they are running all day.
Yeah.
All night. And, you know, we're getting a lot of falls. There does seem to be a lot of falls. There was a fall yesterday of a 70-something-year-old woman that fell down 13 stairs. And her injuries were bad enough that they didn't bring her to the local hospital as they normally would. They had to have a advanced life support unit, and they ferried her into one of the bigger hospitals closer to Boston. So I assume she needed some sort of trauma care. Specialized trauma care.
They had to sew her head back on. That's not easy to do.
But the number of falls are really shocking. But,
the
you know, it's not as
about,
if I've...
You ever read about falls? You can't... It's very difficult to assess the amount of damage in a fall. It's just hard.
That's right.
So, anyway, go ahead.
Oh, well, and I think when there's head trauma... The full extent of the damage is not apparent for a couple of days because of the swelling that comes afterwards. So trying to minimize that swelling and the damage is imperative, and time is really of the essence.
And a hematoma, a subdural hematoma inside the skull, the size of a 25-cent piece, can kill you. That's something. And if you don't believe it, look it up. It doesn't take much. Okay. When you're out and about every day, think about what we do. You go to the store, you get your groceries, right? You're picking things up off the shelves that have been put there by bare hands of stocking people all night. You don't know if they wash their hands. Chances are they certainly don't. So you're picking things up that contain and are covered with, in some cases, bacteria. It's a simple fact. Same with produce. I've watched these guys. No gloves. They just put peaches out and apples out and whatever. So you've got to keep that in mind. But the big equalizer in all this thing between sanity and insanity is, if it is an equalizer at all, are the checkout lines themselves. The checkers, they're barehanded, they're touching item after item after item, they're taking cash from people. Some people still do use cash. I've never seen a checker wash her hands, his hands. Doesn't happen. And then you use your debit or your credit card. What do you do with it? You slot it in, and then you push the keys. Headline, self-service kiosks are crawling with fecal bacteria and many other kinds of bacteria. A new study has found that both feces and vomit-inducing pathogens are all over the surfaces of self-service checkout kiosks. Now, these are the self-service checkouts in the stores, but any time you go to a keypad for anything, you are pushing your fingertips on absolute filth. Sorry, it's true.
Well,
British scientists
during the pandemic, they went to these, you know, great lengths to put coverings over these things, plastic coverings that would be able to be disinfected.
Yeah, and they'd wipe everything down. I'd watch them.
Right, right. Yeah.
No more. Everything's fine. Everything's back to normal. British scientists took swabs from everyday items touched by multiple people and found thousands of bacteria on the frequently used payment machines, the keypads, right there. Present on all surfaces, on nearly all surfaces, was E. coli, while fecal bacteria and microbes associated with urinary tract infections were also found on self-service touch screens. So you got the keypad and you got the touch screen, and you got trouble. You've got to protect yourself. And getting back in the car and driving home and unpacking the groceries and then washing your hands is not the answer. No, you've got to do other things. We wear gloves, little lightweight, innocuous gloves. Put them on, and you're going to be largely protected. You know, once a week, you can wash the gloves or whatever. You don't need plastic surgical gloves. Just get some little cotton gloves, garden gloves, whatever. All right, another one is Candida albicans, which is commonly found in the vagina, the mouth, the throat, the gut. Could cause yeast infections, was also discovered even on an escalator handrail. And shoppers may also be at risk if they share their desk with others at work, as intestinal microbes that can cause a range of infections, including UTIs, were found on computer keyboards. Good luck. You share a keyboard, you're sharing potentially all kinds of trouble. So we're not trying to scare you or be negative. We're just trying to give you a leg up here in safety so you'll know what to do. You need a hand sanitizer with you that you can use. And when you use it, don't forget to use it on your fingertips. Okay?
I believe that is how a number of these shingles cases is spreading. It is spreading through contact.
Sure it
is. The number of people that have the lesions or blisters on their hands is I've never seen as many reports as I am now.
Mm-hmm.
And
they're grabbing
touching things.
You put your hands on a shopping cart and there have been 100 people before you. You don't know what you're getting. The bacteria included Enterococcus, which is found in human feces. And while this is usually harmless, it can, of course, lead to disease, particularly in those who may have weakened immune systems. And guess who that might be? Everyone who's gotten the injection. While both exist naturally in feces and the intestines, given the right environment, they are able to cause quite severe diseases in humans. So it's vital that we wash our hands before and after eating when working at the computer. Now, this should be being taught as a public service on mass media, reminding people. You won't see it because they don't care. They do not care.
Well, you know, the risk has always been there in that regard. And
worse than ever now with AIDS.
Yes, I mean, there's other things that are being transmitted now.
It's vital to try to minimize their effects in terms of infection prevention and control. So when we touch our mouths or go to the toilet and don't wash our hands, we've likely got bacteria from those places on our hands, which can then transfer to other things like keyboards, and touch screens and keypads and subsequently to other people. Okay? So just keep that in mind. People don't talk about these things, but we'll let you know. And there it is. Say
something.
Did
your reader show up?
No.
No, okay. Maybe I can send these to you directly.
I'm sure you can.
Let me try.
No, he didn't put them up. Did you see them?
No.
All right, I just pop them over in the email. Okay, so just to recap, when you go to the store, don't grab the handle on a shopping cart unless you've got gloves on or unless you've got something inside the store you can grab, like one of those wipes that they have sometimes, or antibacterial. You can use those, clean your hands, and then I would also wipe off the handle on the shopping cart. The times I've been in the store without gloves, I'll grab the sides of the shopping cart where the grate is, where, you know, the little bars with inch openings, grab that instead of the push bar, just the sides of it. Sound paranoid? I don't think so.
No.
All right. There's another thing here. Hold on. Let me find it. Okay, here. I got to do this. One second. And this, now I can find out what I'm looking for. No, he has not posted. Okay. Let's see if I can open this. You send it in a nice looking little folder. It says downloading on it.
Oh, so good.
All right, here it appears to be there. I don't know if this is going to work. No, it has everything but the URL. No, we're okay. I could do it.
Well,
I can open
them up. You should see some images in there, do you?
I do. Yeah, I got it. I haven't seen this before, but I got it. Yeah, they're here. A whole lot of them. Okay.
Yeah, okay. With titles.
Yes, titles. Let me see if I can move this over this way. It's a very wide screenshot I got to get here. Okay, I think that's it. Let's see. The top three are KAT, Cat, is the sender of the first one. Sten, then the group member. Childhood hepatitis.
Yeah.
I don't know what the top three are. Cognitive dissonance. I guess these, let me see. Yeah, they're okay. Shedding migraine. Each one has a title. I see. Okay. Well, let's talk about this other issue first.
Okay.
The Terra wand. Terahertz wand. All right. So what is terahertz? Let's go back and rewind a little bit. What is a microwave range of frequency? Your microwave oven, for example. It's 300 megahertz to 300 gigahertz. That's a microwave, typical microwave oven range frequency. Microwave frequency by itself is not 300 megahertz to 300 gigahertz. It's 1 gigahertz to 1,000 gigahertz. Those are microwave frequencies. But the oven itself, 300 megahertz, which is less than 1 gigahertz, to 300 gigahertz. All right, so that's pretty formidable if you get up there. So the question is, obviously, do you want to expose yourself to microwave ovens? Most of you know that microwave ovens leak around the doors. You don't want to stand near them, especially females. You don't want to stand right up next to one with your reproductive organs right there. No thank you. Okay? 5G. What are the frequency ranges on 5G? Now, remember, microwave oven, 300 megahertz to 300 gigahertz. 5G frequency, 450 megahertz to 6 gigahertz. It's right there in the midst of microwave oven frequencies. Although it's at the low end, again, microwave oven frequency range 300, 5 gigahertz, 450 megahertz. All right, 300, 450, up to microwave oven 300 gigahertz, 5G, 6 gigahertz. Now, there's a second tier in 5G of frequencies. That's 24.25 gigahertz to 52 gigahertz. That's pushing up further into that 300 gigahertz top end range for microwave ovens. So they all fit within. Now, terahertz wands, WANDs, are kind of a hot ticket item for some people now. It's caused a lot of turbulence on social media because there are people reporting some results, but there appear to be at least as many people reporting very negative results and extremely unpleasant. I don't know if these are permanent damages or not, but this is something that exists as a profit maker. They're about $300 each, or they're about terahertz wands. Do you want to use this? It starts at the top end of microwave oven frequencies, 300 gigahertz, and goes up to 3,000 gigahertz. It's basically up in no man's land. It's out there, all right? So it's not microwave. It's above that. And I don't know if anybody's done any research on truly scientific damages to the human body from any frequencies in that range of 300 gigahertz to 3,000 gigahertz. But these things are being used all the time on people. Tell us more.
Okay, so about a week or so ago, last week we mentioned that Dr. Pierre Curie had put out an announcement that he was warning people, his vax-injured patients and his long-haul COVID patients, were reporting to him that they had tried this wand, this terahertz wand, and apparently there's a couple different brands, and the progress that they were making in managing their symptoms suffered a severe relapse. And many of these people were right back to square one in terms of their symptomatology. Some were having seizures, convulsions, headaches, ringing in the ears, balance issues, deep pain. Very, very unpleasant. And the response of the people that are selling this thing, apparently it's somewhat like a multi-level marketing thing, I believe. They're being dismissed as healing crises. Herxheimer's reactions.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Sure, that's the perfect excuse. Perfect.
Yeah. and they're really being, you know, shunned and shamed and belittled and accused of not having the gumption to stick it out. So now they're, because these people
are
not able to...
If you use this thing and you have pain and severe negative reactions, you're supposed to just tough it out and keep using it because you'll get better, because that's just the sign of Herxheimer's.
Right.
You're cleansing your body.
Right.
Uh-huh.
So there's a lot of misrepresentation going on with this thing. It is being billed as safe, which I don't know where you're getting this data from. There isn't much research on the use of terahertz frequencies in humans. I was able to find an article Optical Society of America. They published something in June of 2014. They said terahertz radiation, formerly thought to be harmless to the human body due to its low energy and to have wider applications than X-rays, has been found to have side effects. The Korean Advanced Institute of Science and Technology announced on June 18, this is 2014, that a research team led by Kim Phil Han, professor of the Graduate School of Nanoscience and Technology, and Dr. Jung Young Wook, of the Korea Atomic Energy Research Institute discovered symptoms of infections on skin tissue of a test animal exposed to terahertz radiation. As electromagnetic radiation in the range of 0.1 to 10 terahertz, terahertz radiation is highly penetrable to the extent that it is possible to see the inside of an object like X-rays owing to their longer wavelength than that of visible and infrared light. Hence, they are used in various areas, such as security screening, next-gen wireless mobile communications, and medical imaging technology. Nevertheless, the effects of terahertz radiation on the human body have only rarely been examined. After developing a high-powered terahertz wave generator that can be used on animal bodies, the research team created a high-resolution 3D laser scanning microscope. The team exposed a genetically engineered mouse to high-power terahertz radiation for 30 minutes and observed the skin of the mouse with a 3D laser scanning microscope. They discovered that the number of infected cells increased more than 6 times after 6 hours of exposure. It is the first time to find... It is the first time to find side effects of terahertz radiation exposure, which were widely acknowledged to have the potential to effectively treat skin diseases, such as squamous cell carcinoma, without damaging the human body. The research findings were published online in the May 19 issue of Optics Express, a scientific journal published by the Optical Society of America. So, other than that, there isn't much out there. We do know that it can regulate gene expression. Probably more significantly, it can change membrane permeability, which would create disturbances in calcium signaling. That's a big deal, especially when it comes to nerves. Nerves fire based on action potentials, and it's a concentration gradients or the flow of ions across membranes. And when you depolarize a membrane, then changes happen. Sometimes they're not good. And then we have DNA methylation changes, which that can either cause or maybe remedy cancer. It can cause or ameliorate inflammation, and it can cause or cure neurodegenerative diseases. It can go either way, but we do not have any data to indicate what's the correct dose, what's the correct frequency, what's the correct time, duration. None of these have been determined. And now people are getting hurt with this thing that's being, casually marketed almost as if it were a toy.
Well, if it were me, I would not buy one. Not until there's a hell of a lot more hard science to show what these frequency ranges might do to my body. I think it's
asking a lot for comparison.
To explain it away as pain, as Herxheimer's. No, that doesn't work.
I've got a couple of the comments. A new group has been formed where people are able to discuss these adverse events that they're having, because apparently in the groups that have been set up, anybody that speaks negatively is muted. How convenient. There are quite a bit of quite a number of alarming reports, if you want to take a minute and read a few.
So just think about this again. From terahertz waves run from 300 all the way up to 3,000 gigahertz, 300 gig to 3,000 gig. What happens in that frequency range? Do we know what these wands are actually putting out with specificity? And if we do, have they been tested in the lab, in vitro or any other way, to find out what they might do or not do to live cells? That's a huge frequency spectrum.
It is. Just for comparison, I mean, this terahertz frequency is above and beyond 5G. I mean, this is the one that's going to be designated for 6G whenever that becomes available. So it surpasses the 5G, and people are complaining about
5G.
How much damage that's doing to them.
Terrible. Well, the highest range is frequency range 2 in 5G, and that goes up to 52 gigahertz. the frequency range 1 that most people are using now goes up to 6 gigahertz. And again, terahertz begins at 300 gigahertz and goes up to 3,000 gigahertz. What goes on in that frequency range? Can someone show me with absolute proof that there's no damage potential in there? No, they can't do it. There's no hard science. Nothing.
I mean, frequencies are very powerful.
Oh, yeah.
You know, especially any pulse frequency is biologically active. Now, what it's doing?
We don't know.
Yeah, in this case, we don't know.
These are sub-millimeter waves. And remember, 5G is millimeter waves. But that's way down there. That's under 6 gigahertz on the first range and under 52 gigs on the second range of 5G. And at the end of this year, only 70% of America at the most will even have 5G. So 30% won't have it. So it's not anywhere. You're not going to see 6G for the better part of 10 years. And God only knows how many people will be left in 10 years. But that's coming. Maybe they'll use that to engage their transhumanist agenda and completely control people. Anything's possible. So anyhow, just these terahertz ones, for any of you out there who are thinking about them, maybe some of you will say, I've had great results. Well, maybe you have. Good. Others haven't. Bad. So do your research. Do your homework before you engage in this, because it's really an unknown commodity. That's my feeling after looking at it as I have.
Yeah, I agree. And then somebody in this group asked today, this is, where is it? Right here.
Readers are up.
Oh, excellent. Good. These are manufactured in China. And they are being marketed with the assurance that China has done all the testing that's necessary on these things, and that's why they're
Chinese.
Safe.
You betcha. That's right.
But here is what one person said today. Here's a thought. China is going through this horrible no-COVID policy, locking people down in these quarantine camps. Well, these magic wands are made in China. Why aren't they distributing these wands to all these people in China? Why do they want them in our hands? Why aren't we delivering these door-to-door in China? Help them kill COVID. I'm just curious.
Y'all can figure that one out. That's a no-brainer. The Chinese do not have our best interests in mind at all. They have our destruction in mind. And I don't trust anything from China. Nothing, especially a terahertz wand. And how do you know that that wand is putting out what it even claims to put out? Really? Maybe it could modulate. We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, it's all crazy. I forgot to mention one thing about bacterial contamination of anything in public that people touch, and even in the office and keyboards. You share keyboards with somebody, whatever. Don't forget about spike protein and mRNA quite potentially being on those keys, on those touch screens, on anything else that we're talking about in this conversation about how to stay safe and stay well. Okay? We do know now that every body fluid can exude spike protein and the mRNA, and that can end up being on a computer screen easily that you touch, or a keypad that you program in, or the handle on a shopping cart. Please keep that in mind. And we're not paranoid here. We're factual. These are just things you ought to know. So get some, we would suggest, get some lightweight gloves when you go shopping, and you won't have to worry about it. You want to try and sterilize a grocery cart handle? Good luck. Maybe you can do it. Maybe you can't do it. I don't know. But I prefer the gloves. All right. Let's go to the human side of this catastrophe and take a look at some of this stuff. What do we have? Where do you want to start?
Oh, we can clean up some of the ones from
December 7th?
Last week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we could do that, or just...
There's only two there, I think. Long-term insurance and medical bills, that's all I've got.
No, we did those. Those are done.
Okay, then I think the whole thing's done.
That could be. I thought they were, maybe they were, oh, December 5th, I think it was.
There we go. There's some down there. Aldehydes, endometrial cancer, and formaldehyde. So, start there. We'll never get through these. Plenty of those.
Okay.
Okay. Go ahead.
What do we want to do? I guess we could do the formaldehyde thing. And this pertains to the smells, because what's happening, what my best guess, what makes the most sense, is that as people suffer the ravages of oxidative stress, their lipids in their cell membranes are becoming oxidized, and one of the byproducts of lipid peroxidation is aldehydes, the formation of aldehydes, many of which are toxic and carcinogenic. But they can be of all different types, and some of them actually are quite fragrant. But one of the main ones in human metabolism, intentional or not, is the creation of formaldehyde. And it would be a natural metabolite of normal biological processes. It's also a metabolite of aspartame. So it can accumulate to toxic levels in people that are somewhat compromised. Usually it's very, very quickly degraded, and it's not an issue. But I think in these people that are compromised because they're having liver issues and problems detoxing, it may be building up, and it may be one of the things that they are off-gassing and making other people around them sick. Now, not everybody is as sensitive to aldehyde as some people. Once you develop a sensitivity to it, you will have symptoms almost immediately, whether you can smell it or not. Usually there's kind of a burning sensation in the sinus cavity when you are exposed to it. Maybe burning eyes, burning throat. But anyway, there's some threads here about that. And somebody claims to have actually gotten a meter, a VOC meter, that can detect formaldehyde and measured it coming off of the vaxxed.
Okay, go ahead.
All right.
Zero.
Yep. I just spent time with my 86-year-old grandmother in her old folks' home, and within an hour, I felt the effects of the poor, indoor-heated, air-filled with all of the shedding.
See? Yeah.
A creeping headache, an ecliptic fever, and a sudden sore throat with post-nasal drip. I've been out now for about 45 minutes, and the symptoms are subsiding. It was like being locked in a garage with a car spouting off fumes.
Carbon monoxide, for example. You cannot work in an office, dear friends, in a closed environment, in a mixed, vaxxed environment, and expect not to get shed upon. You can't. That's just shedding in general. This is interesting that this person picked this up with his from his 86-year-old grandma. Yeah.
Well, in a nursing home, apparently, where they're all shot up and they're all off-gassing, shedding, right. Off-gassing.
Yep.
Now, just for the record, for informational purposes, the aldehyde, there is an aldehyde that's associated with aging, and it's known as the old age smell, old age odor. It's a distinct smell that some or many old people, elderly people, exude, and it's very distinctive. And it's known as melondialdehyde. And it's a very specific, it's for lipid peroxidation. As people age, they become less capable of metabolizing these lipid peroxides. So they do form this melondialdehyde, which has a distinct odor known as the old person smell. But much has been studied about it and its damaging effects. It can create addicts with proteins and nucleotides and just, you know, accelerate the aging process.
Got it. All right, second one. I do not own a VOC meter. I thought of doing the experiment myself, but I don't want to get shed upon by going to places where vaxxed people are. so I haven't done it. But I have seen some people in Japan who did the experiment, going to gyms, saunas, malls, etc., and it seems like they are releasing PM2.5 and formaldehyde 2. I totally hear you about the mask's efficiency. I have done tons of research as well, but there are masks that seal completely if you wear it correctly out there. Toto Bobo is one of them. That's Toto Bobo. I don't never heard of it. Toto Bobo is one of them. Again, I do not recommend wearing it if you don't have to, but for people like me with multiple chemical sensitivity, it could be a lifesaver. All right.
Yeah, so I think if we're dealing with VOCs here, the mask probably isn't going to do much to filter it. You'd actually need a respirator type of mask,
mm-hmm.
you know, with carbon filtration.
Mm-hmm.
Although people do say when they wear the air ionizer, they do get some relief from the shedding symptoms. So that, to me, indicates that because... before all of this COVID nonsense or shedding, these things were typically used for people who had allergies. They would wear these things around their neck and because it would grab on to the allergens in the air.
And pull them down to the ground.
And pull them
so
down.
You don't breathe
so this
yep.
is if people are shedding a protein, this spike protein, I mean, a spike is a protein and a potential allergen, and they're getting relief, that indicates to me that this thing is working to pull spikes out of their breathing space. The VOCs is a different, you know. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
The VOCs, however, would you'd need a different strategy to right. protect yourself from them.
I would rather hassle with VOCs than spike proteins and mRNA myself. So if you want to look at these devices, we have them on the homepage just above headline news. You'll see them. Wear them around your neck. We always have them when we go out. It's very simple. They charge on a USB, and they'll last for days. You don't have to charge them up often. It's very simple. Okay, the next one. The formaldehyde makes sense because I can smell people who have been toxinated, and it smells to me like a sort of metallic patchouli with a hint of artificial sweetness and body odor. What a combination that is. Some people that I have sat next to on flights or stood behind in lines at the amusement park have this powerful cloud of toxin stink just billowing off their bodies. It is disgusting and it is disturbing. I agree. All right. Number three, go ahead.
It is aldehyde. That's why all those weird smells. Someone says, I smell something weird, but I can't, not sure what the rest of that is. And this person says, definitely shedding. It smells different for everyone, but mainly burning sensation in the nose. And another reply, I think that burning is the formaldehyde component. And I would agree.
Finish it off.
Okay. Yes, that's why they all smell different, like embalming solution, which is formaldehyde, or sweet-smelling, like ester, which can be produced from aldehyde. Alcohol could be a contributing factor in smell.
Hmm. All right, formaldehyde symptoms. Most formaldehyde exposures occur by inhalation or by skin or eye contact. Formaldehyde vapor is readily absorbed from the lungs, for example. In cases of acute exposure, formaldehyde will most likely be detected by smell. However, persons who are sensitized, as Erica said, to formaldehyde may experience headaches and minor eye and airway irritation at levels below the odor threshold. Odor threshold is 0.5 to 1.0 ppm. For sensitized persons, odor is not an adequate indicator of formaldehyde's presence and may not provide reliable warning of hazardous concentrations. Odor adaption can occur. Low-dose acute exposure can result in headaches, rhinitis, and
dyspnea.
I was just going to say that. Higher doses may cause severe mucous membrane irritation, including burning and lacrimation. And lower respiratory effects, such as bronchitis, pulmonary edema, or pneumonia. Sensitive individuals may experience asthma and dermatitis, even at very low doses. Formaldehyde vapors are slightly heavier than air and can result in asphyxiation in poorly ventilated, enclosed, low-lying areas. Well, okay, so those are some of the issues of inhaling formaldehyde. Next.
Okay, continuing, immunologic effects of formaldehyde exposure. In persons who have been previously sensitized, inhalation and skin contact may cause various skin disorders, asthma-like symptoms, anaphylactic reactions, and rarely, hemolysis, which is the destruction of red blood cells. The immune system in children continues to develop after birth, and thus children may be more susceptible to certain chemicals.
Okay, do the next one, too.
Okay, and for chronic exposure, the major concerns of repeated formaldehyde exposure are sensitization and cancer. In sensitized persons, formaldehyde can cause asthma and contact dermatitis. In persons who are not sensitized, prolonged inhalation of formaldehyde at low levels is unlikely to result in chronic pulmonary injury. Adverse effects on the central nervous system, such as increased prevalence of headache, depression, mood changes, insomnia, irritability, attention deficit, and impairment of dexterity, memory, and equilibrium have been reported to result from long-term exposure. Chronic exposure may be more serious for children because of their potential longer latency period.
Wow. All right, respiratory. Even fairly low concentrations of formaldehyde can produce rapid onset of nose and throat irritation, causing cough, chest pain, shortness of breath, and wheezing. Higher exposures can cause significant inflammation of the lower respiratory tract, resulting in swelling of the throat, inflammation of the windpipe and bronchi, narrowing of the bronchi, inflammation of the lungs, and accumulation of fluid in the lungs. Pulmonary injury may continue to worsen for 12 hours or more after exposure. Previously sensitized individuals can develop severe narrowing of the bronchi at very low concentrations. Bronchial narrowing may begin immediately or can be delayed for 3 to 4 hours. Effects may worsen for up to 20 hours after exposure and can persist for several days. It sounds like some of the injury symptoms and symptomology of getting injected. See, there's only so many symptoms out there, and you get confused. Go ahead.
I can't help but think that some of these shedding sicknesses is maybe a combination of spike, but also what's being off-gassed.
VOCs.
In particular, formaldehyde. Now, as this description said, it doesn't necessarily have to have a smell.
Yeah. Very important. So primarily, people are exuding formaldehyde in a VOC configuration. It's an aldehyde. All right. Where does that formaldehyde directly come from in the body? What is creating it before it gets dumped off onto your neighbor next to you in line at the supermarket? What's making it? After you've been injected,
humans do produce it as a normal part of mm-hmm. various metabolic processes. People who drink soda with the aspartame, I mean, formaldehyde is a byproduct of the metabolism of aspartame. So they may be, normal healthy people break this down fairly quickly. But when, their detox pathways are impaired, as they probably would be if they're suffering high levels of lipid peroxidation, they may not be breaking this down. And so it's going to...
High levels of lipid peroxidation come from...
Oh, the severe oxidative stress, partially from iron. Yep. Yeah. The more iron, the more oxidative stress you're going to have. So cells that are damaged in this process, the lipids are what get destroyed. And the lipids degrade into these aldehydes, which are very, very toxic. And your body does have pathways to break these things down, to convert them into less toxic metabolites. But at a certain point, that pathway is overburdened and these toxins back up and build up. And they will try to leave or become sequestered, whatever. But I think that that is what's happening. Their aldehyde detoxification pathway is overloaded.
Sure.
And they're essentially being poisoned themselves by many of these aldehydes. Mm-hmm. And in fact, that's what's known as the Asian dementia. Some Asian people have a defect in their ability to process aldehydes. And so they age very rapidly. They come down with neurodegenerative diseases in midlife, 40s, 50s.
Interesting. Wow.
And it's because they can't detoxify aldehydes normally.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be part of the fallout from having taken these injections and the severe oxidative stress that's occurring throughout their bodies. It's just overwhelming and causing rapid aging, and this is one of those manifestations.
Let's loop back and remind everyone that the spike protein goes after your red blood cell, which is formed essentially of hemoglobin and iron, and it loves to cleave that cell and destroy it, releasing the iron to be unbound and floating through your system, your bloodstream. Same thing with the hemoglobin. They're both now free. They're not part of one cell, and the iron causes the fats around your cells to oxidize, to burn. You're burning yourself up with iron, basically, right? You're frying yourself.
Free iron. Normally, iron should be bound to a protein in the body. It should not be roaming around unbound. When it's unbound, it's a catalyst for all kinds of oxidative reactions, and so it generates free radicals. Free radicals, there are many different types. There's types that come from oxygen. There's others that come from nitrogen. And part of the problem is some of these reactive nitrogen species that are formed, they're also quite damaging. But the free iron is a catalyst for that. And, of course, the more iron you have on board, the more potential there is for that to happen. And people do accumulate iron as they go through life because the body has no natural way of getting rid of it other than bloodletting. So as you age, it's normal to have higher amounts of iron in the body than you would when you were much younger. And it's a hallmark of aging. And that's why some of these longevity enthusiasts and anti-aging zealots have taken to routine bloodletting. Therapeutic phlebotomy, where they donate a certain amount of blood periodically, every couple of months or twice a year, whatever they can manage, just to get rid of excess iron.
And so when you get injected, all of a sudden you're loaded with free-floating, unbound iron.
Well,
because
I wouldn't say you can't manage it. What happens is the body, in its wisdom to try to protect itself from what it thinks is an invading microbe, sequesters the iron in its tissues, mostly the liver, but some of the white blood cells, but then other organs start to accumulate it, and it's devastating when it becomes the heart or the kidneys, the brain, the endocrine system. These are all very, very susceptible to damage by this iron that begins to accumulate. So this, having the spike present causes this to happen. And then conversely, as the red blood cells get destroyed, they're unable to be replaced because the spike is interfering with the production of heme, which is the beginning of the creation of a new red blood cell. among other
fun
things.
Times.
Heme is used for... It's incredible, the wide-reaching...
The many, many ways that the S protein, the spike protein, can destroy living organisms. Many ways. It's just, it's so diabolical. Let's do the two endometrial cancers real quick. We have time.
Okay. Yep.
All right. Hi, everyone. I'm 26 and currently waiting on testing to see if I have endometrial cancer. 26 years old. I'm really worried as I ignored my symptoms for a while, thinking it wasn't anything at all. A year ago, I had surgery to remove an adrenal tumor. And around the same time I had surgery is when I started to experience pelvic pain. At first, I thought maybe it was from the surgery, so I ignored it. But then the pain became more frequent and severe. My endo sent me for a pelvic, it's her doctor, sent me for a pelvic CT, CAT scan, which came back clear, and then a few months ago is when the spotting started. I've now been over a month with spotting every day and cramps, pelvic pain that radiates down to my legs and back. I'm not sure if that's a symptom. I'm really just very scared right now.
Some of these make you want to cry. 26.
Yeah, go ahead. One more.
Okay, another one. Oh, wait, this is the same one. Has anyone been put on meds to stop bleeding? I've been bleeding every day for 4 months. Some days are really heavy and others just very light. I'm going for my biopsy this week, but this bleeding I cannot deal with anymore. I'm really low in iron and taking an iron supplement, but it just seems like it's not enough, and I'm very weak and dizzy. And one person comments, I was put on a couple different types of progesterone to try to stop my crime scene amounts of bleeding. I would bleed continuously 3 to 4 months at a time. We also tried an IUD. Neither of them worked for me. I had polyps that they said meds wouldn't stop that kind of bleeding. I had a DNC, and that's when they found I had uterine cancer. So
keep in mind these are younger women, in many cases, tragically young, at the height of their childbearing years, and they're destroyed. Endometrial cancer.
Yeah, and they are, these ones are legitimately low in iron. They are bleeding out, and they are losing iron. And the thing is, with this, when you have this type of situation where the body is sequestering iron, and you begin to develop an anemia of chronic inflammation, you cannot absorb any iron supplements. The body shuts down the absorption of iron from the intestine when this chronic inflammation is present. So to correct it, you almost need a blood transfusion or an iron infusion, but if you're not, of course, if you're not making red blood cells, you'd have to have the red blood cells from a donor.
Right.
That's why there's so many of these transfusions happening today, but I don't know what good they're doing.
I don't either. Okay, that's it for this episode. We'll be back on Wednesday. Thank you, Erica. Talk soon.
Okay, Jeff. My pleasure. Okay. Have a good evening, everyone.
And we'll be back with Mitchell Henderson after the top of the hour break, just in a few minutes, so hang on.